Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I am joined by my co-host, Casey.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, man?
Not a lot.
You had a good weekend? I didn't even get to see you.
Yeah, I did. Just, got moved and just kicked back the rest of it.
Yeah? You play some Magic?
Yeah, I did. I played in a PPTQ.
Okay.
Didn't go super well, but, it was still fun.
You know, I think that if you're getting to the point where you're not doing well in tournaments and having fun, you're at a really good spot in Magic.
Yeah, exactly. And, I was a little bit salty at the tournament just because things really weren't breaking my way, but that's a really bad attitude to have, and, it's going to happen to everybody sometimes.
You know what should make you less salty? Our new patrons. So we just want to give a shout out. You can support this podcast by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. And we have a couple new patrons. We'd like to give a shout out to a few of them. We have Lee, Jared, and Nicholas, all new patrons this week. We have some more as well. But I just want to say, to Lee, Jared, and Nicholas, and we'll give some more shout outs again. But thank you. Last week we, really funny, we had some people tell us they didn't want the shout out. They were just giving us the money. Because they love the podcast. And last week on the show, I said that if every listener donated $1 per month, I could quit my job, I could pay my co-hosts, it would literally change my life. And we had a lot of people respond in really kind ways. And to be honest, we got some negative feedback. They're like, I can't believe you said that on the show. You should talk about the benefits of being a patron, not just ask for money. And it worked really well, to be completely honest. And it's something that Casey and I had discussed in detail before making the decision to say that on the podcast. But honestly, it's the truth. We put work into this show. And if every listener that we had, of the listeners that we've gained through our years of doing this show, gave us just $1, it would legitimately change our lives.
Yeah, certainly, show's always going to be free, but if you get something out of it and want to give something back so that we can start making more and more content and do more and more so you get more and more out of it, then, it's something that, we would appreciate and a lot of people out there would appreciate, yeah, too.
One of the benefits is getting your names out on the podcast, so shout out to Lee, Jared, and Nicholas. It means the world to us, guys. I don't just say that. When I get that notification that somebody's donating money to the show because they feel like something that they've gotten is worth value, it makes my day. So thank you to all of you. You can also support the podcast by going to Wasted Games. You can check them out at wastedgamesllc.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using code CCMTG at checkout. It also makes my day when I walk into Oasis and I'm told that a bunch of people ordered cards. I know people bought an entire Legacy decks, entire Commander decks and stuff like that. 15% off of your first order is a huge deal. So if you haven't used the code yet, go do it. They're a great place. They're opening a store in Santiago. Stay tuned for that. If you're a South American listener in the Chile area, your world's about to get rocked because Oasis is amazing.
Rocked.
So let's move on to hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast. We believe if you are not getting better, you are getting worse. And we always want to be doing what we can to be striving to be hashtag always improving. For those who've listened for a long time on this show, you know that I hate it when players say that there's nothing they could have done to do better at a tournament, because I believe that's always true. And this weekend, for example, I misbuilt my sealed pool by, I think, one card that did actually cost me games. It was the worst. It's even worse when you know which card it is and you draw it.
Yeah, and you're like,
oh man, if this was that other card, I'd literally win right now. At the same time, even though I did know where I made mistakes there. I went to GP San Jose this weekend, day two finish, conceded in the last round to a pro that needed the pro points. I kind of had to get walked off a ledge. Michael really had to talk me out of being furious. And, it's really hard when... So, for example, I had a game where I drew 10 lands and in my 16-land deck. And, after the match, I was talking to my opponent. I was like, yeah, if I had actually just been able to fade two more draw steps, I actually would have won I just had the burn spells. And it was funny because we talked about it and we were trying to find, like, is there a time where I could have taken less damage to get those two draw steps, right? And after talking to Michael, he's like, no, dude, like, you just made the right plays. You just drew your cards in the wrong order. Like, and that's hard for me to accept. It's and I think that I need to learn when to admit when things are out of my control. And I'm not very good at that yet. Because Magic is a culture of where people blame things. It's a blame culture. I blame Modern for sucking. I blame Wizards for this. I blame this. I blame this. I blame this. And I hate that culture. And I want to be a part of the culture that says, what can I do to be better in Magic, in life, and things like that? And I think that that causes me a lot of frustrations in my life. You know, when I think about politics or religion or things that just aren't completely out of my control a lot of the time, I get really frustrated. And I think that that comes back to bite me in Magic when I have experiences like this weekend where there were a lot of things that were out of my control. And I need to learn how to get better at that. And that's my always improving moment, is my dedication to trying to learn it without giving up on my beliefs.
Yeah, so I mean, it's hard to strike a balance, right? And I think everybody struggles with this, where
at least everybody who's trying to do this,
right? You want to take as much responsibility as you can without it becoming ridiculous, right? You don't want to make up unrealistic expectations of yourself, like, oh, I should have known that I was going to draw seven lands, so I should have done this.
Yeah. So for this actually happened. So I was talking about a hand with somebody, and it was a 2-drop, a 3-drop, and a four mana removal spell, and 4 lands. And I was like, maybe I should have mulliganed that. Maybe I wouldn't have drawn 12 lands that game. Somebody's like, you could literally never mulligan that hand.
Yeah, it would just be wrong, right? So,
but that's the thing, is I overthink things.
Yeah, so it's easy to be like, well, knowing what the order of the cards in my deck were, I definitely would have mulliganed it just to get different cards on top of my deck.
Right.
But, like, you have to look at the hand as is, you know, what the cards you're likely to draw, not what the cards you did draw are.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I'm going to make an effort to not get frustrated when things are out of my control, to be better at that, because I'm really bad at it. I want to give a couple of shout-outs. So I met a few fans this weekend. I met Ryan, who just, right when I got to the event site, came up and shook my hand and told me he loved the show. So I just came up, shook my hand. I was like, hey, I was like, oh, what's your name? He's like, I'm Ryan. I was like, all right, nice to meet you, man. Thanks so much for listening. So shout out to you. Jed is somebody that we invited to hang out with us this weekend, who was a listener. He had some family stuff going on as well. But yeah, shout out to Jed, who was somebody I met. Tom was super nice. So shout out to Tom. Jesse was so stoked to meet me, and I was so stoked to meet him. He's an active member of the Facebook group. If you go to the Conservatism family, you'll see Jesse there, and I was super happy to meet you too, man. Scotty, the Twitter guy, as I like to call him, got to meet him, and he asked me to sign a Grey Merchant of Asphodel.
Oh, did you draw anything on it?
No, I specifically told him, don't worry, I won't draw anything on it.
Shame on you.
No, I just signed it. Sometimes you get asked to sign cards you don't like, man. It's okay. It's part of being a Magic personality. You just get to do those things.
Yeah, and you also get to draw on their Grey Merchants. It's a win-win.
I don't think that's true. But yeah, shout out to all of you guys who came up to me and talked to me at the GP. I really appreciated it. It makes those events really worthwhile to me. But the last 3 GPs I've gone to have just been, I mean, it's crazy, the number of people.
Yeah, I mean, GPs in general are getting huge, and our listener base is getting bigger and bigger all the time, right? So I'm just running into more and more. Surprised to run into a few at the Legacy Grand Prix in Kentucky. You know, like, I was expecting to see almost nobody there total.
Yeah.
And, you know, just be able to, you know, talk to a few listeners was awesome.
Awesome. So shout out to you guys. I really appreciate it. Casey, what was your hashtag always improving moment this weekend?
Well, it's just I've been having a lot of fun. I've been playing Jeskai Saheeli, and it feels like it's my deck, which I haven't really had the last couple of standard formats. You know, I've just played whatever deck I thought was the best for the week or for the tournament, which is kind of the better philosophy in general, but it is kind of nice to have a deck that you really, really just enjoy playing, and you always want to, you want that to be your deck for the tournament, and you want to win with that deck. And that's how I'm feeling about this deck, and I'm getting really into it and thinking about it a lot and tuning it a lot.
Cool.
And it's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Michael, what did you, oh, what a jerk. Going to freaking Dublin. How does he have internet? How are they talking to me right now?
Have they not left the U.S. yet? They probably have a layover on the East Coast.
So they're leaving at 6 our time, and it's a 7-hour flight. Oh, maybe they left at, that's still, there's just no way. I don't know how he's talking to me. But Michael says that he learned not to listen to Alex Sinner when it comes to when to leave your Airbnb.
Oh, yeah? Why is that?
Because they were told that they needed to leave by noon, and apparently they could stay later than that. I don't know. Oh, maybe they had to leave earlier, because he said 11. So he just was told wrong.
Oh, yeah. So, like, they thought they could hang out until noon, and the owner came in and, like, wrote down the door at 11:15, like, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah, apparently.
He turned the hoses on him.
That's, yeah, which that is unfortunate. Not great, so... Michael's learning stuff all the time. So, but no, let us know what your hashtag always improving moment is by joining the Facebook group or tweeting at us. We love to hear about them. And also, you can message me on Facebook. One of my favorite things is to get people's hashtag always improving moments sent to me on Facebook. We've had some quite amazing ones. We had a doctor tell us that listening to the podcast and putting himself in that mindset helped him save somebody's life. We've had some amazing hashtag always improving stories. So we always love to hear them and let us know. You can also, listen to this podcast for something even better. And that's the power rankings. Some people just listen to the power rankings, I've been told. Fun fact. All
right, that is fun.
And this week we're doing standard again. So there was another SEG. This is the first. I have some thoughts on this, but this is the first SEG that I can remember that is the week before the Pro Tour, and that there were two SEGs before a Pro Tour that I can remember.
Yeah, I don't recall this ever happening before, but maybe they were just like, they kind of were the same tournament twice, so it didn't feel, I don't know, it feels like they usually don't do this.
And I think that it's going to hurt certain people in Pro Tour testing. Because I think a large percentage of them who aren't on big teams have to wait to see the second week of SEG results before they can do major testing. And that means that they only get like 5 days of major testing.
Well, hopefully they were testing before, used the first SEG data to improve their testing, and then were able to use this to just keep improving their testing. I hope they didn't start this morning.
Yeah.
But, yeah. If you did, good luck. Godspeed to you.
Let's move on to those power rankings. So the way the points work is you get points for your finish in a tournament. You get 5 points for first.
Six.
6 points for first, 5 points for second, 4 points for top four, 3 points for top 16, and 2 points for top 32.
3 points for top 8, 2 points for top 16, 1 point for top 32.
Boom. Even better. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. We have various aggro decks coming in with 7 points. What does various aggro decks mean?
There was a white-red humans, a black-red zombies, a teamer Eldrazi, and
that deck is Emerge.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it is.
Pull it up.
I just had it up. That was the list I just had up. I was looking at it.
There's...
It's four Wretched... It's two Wretchedgrith.
Yeah, but he's put like...
Four Elder Deep Fiends.
It is,
four Sanctum of Ugins.
I don't know. This deck seems much more aggressively bent than any version of this deck I've ever seen.
Yeah, because they're like not dirtling, but it's still an Emerge deck.
Yeah, sure. But still. And then one Esper aggro deck. So just kind of...
Sure. A varied aggro decks trying to do different things.
Yeah, exactly. None of them other than... There were just a bunch of things, and nothing other than the top four decks really had significant points independently.
Awesome. Well, I do think that it's interesting kind of where aggro sits in this format. I just kind of expected it to get better with the loss of Emrakul and Reflector Mage. And it did in the form of Black-Green. And maybe Black-Green is so good that it's keeping the other aggro decks down because it's so much bigger. But I kind of just expected like Mono-Red or Red-White or Red-Black like just to kind of come up.
I mean, I think Mono Red, for example, is in a pretty poor state because people were excited about the reprint of Shock. Like, when you're, like, when Shock is not only a card that you are willing to play, but it's a card you're excited about playing in your Mono Red deck because it's an improvement over something you're already playing, it's probably not the best day to be playing Mono Red.
Sure.
And I think that, I mean,
there's... Having no, basically no two-power one-drops other than one of them, when you typically want 12, is probably pretty rough.
Yeah, exactly. Mono Red is just not in a super great spot. You know, I'm sure that some humans deck will come out of the woodwork again at some point because, you know, most of those cards are still around and it's still a pretty powerful strategy. People are just more excited about doing the cooler things right now, I think. Sure.
Well, let's move on to some of the cooler things people are doing. We have Jeskai Control coming with 5 points. This deck took, I believe, is it second place? Fourth place.
Yeah, it was like a fourth place and a top 16, I think.
Yeah, so these decks are just Jeskai Control with no combo. They're just a control deck. Honestly, what are your thoughts on the... Oh, this one actually does have a combo.
Oh, yeah, 20th other place combo.
Has Crackdown Construct and Wandering Fumeral.
It's a different combo. Yeah, and I think that this deck is interesting in that it's pretty powerful just in its own right. It's like a perfectly reasonable control deck, right? You're playing all the things that you would normally want to play in a control deck. But then you also get the benefit of people won't tap out against you in the mid game, especially in game ones, because they're afraid of getting comboed. You know, playing decks like Splinter Twin, you would oftentimes board out your combo because people still had to play around it, and it lets you free up your deck to do other things. In this deck, you're kind of starting out that way, where it's the deck is good enough if unit people are onto you that it's still functional, but that's a huge added benefit in game ones, where control decks tend to be a lot weaker. So it's kind of a, this deck is uniquely well-positioned, I think.
Yeah, if I was playing in a tournament tomorrow, there basically is zero chance that I wouldn't be playing Jeskai, straight Jeskai Control. I think that it is actively the best deck right now, and I think that the Pro Tour will show that. That's my prediction. I'm not sure, but I think that it has all of the tools to beat every deck in Standard.
Yeah.
And Control hasn't had that in a long time.
No, I agree. I think Torrential Gearhulk is a beast, and now that it's not competing with Emrakul for like the top of the...
For the top dog on the top of the food chain.
Right.
For the Apex Predator slot.
Exactly. It's going to be showing up more and more. People are going to keep working on finding the best Torrential Gearhulk deck. And I think that Jeskai is a great place to start because of how many good instants you get. And but, this deck is sweet.
But it's not alone, Casey. In fact, there's another control deck that's trying to topple it. We have Blue-Black Control coming up next. What are your thoughts on this deck? I know that you played against it this week. We have a Quentin Pierce, former co-host of the show. He if he's not playing Blue-Black Control, I don't know what he's doing with his life. So he is all about this deck right now. What are your thoughts on it?
I think it's good. It's well-positioned against other control decks, basically, is sort of its hallmark or what it's really well-positioned for. It lets you just play a lean, mean mana base, and it lets you play a bunch of really powerful cards, you know, whether you're choosing to play Kalidus or not, or Liliana or not, or, you know, whatever. But the fact that you get access to these real haymakers in black that you don't get in Jeskai colors, or you just because you can't afford the heavy color requirements.
As much as I love Jace, Amnixilis is just better.
Right. It's almost the same card, but a little bit better.
Right.
Right. They have very shockingly similar abilities.
Yeah, and like Fatal Push, just better than Shock, right? Grasp of Darkness, probably worse than Harness Lightning, if you ask, like, by a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty close, but yeah, I would say so.
And then you have Murder. I need to figure out the name of this word. I've been thinking of this word all day. That Murder and Stasis Snare are what?
Interchangeable?
Pretty close. It's not the word that I'm looking for, though. They like serve the same function. I'll never figure it out. This word will bug me until my dying day, I'll lay on my deathbed. I'll be like, this is the word! This is the word! Anyway. So there's a lot of cards that do the same thing in the deck, that serve the same purpose in the decks, and some have benefits over the other. But overall, I think they're both just great torrential gear hold decks.
Yeah, exactly. And it's trying to figure it out. You know, maybe the answer is Grixis or Esper, or, you know, kind of some other amalgamation of the two decks. Maybe, you know, somebody will figure out that one of them is just hands down better.
Yeah. One of the reasons, because I think this, we should talk about why I like the other version better, is I think that Fumigate is just a beating right now. Oh, and yeah, that's why I like Jeskai over Blue-Black.
Yeah, Fumigate is a savage beating against the aggressive decks because they're not that aggressive, but they need to play a lot to the board to get full value because it's a synergy deck. So, yeah, Fumigate is a brick house right now.
Overall, though, I do like these Blue-Black control decks. I think that they lack in the, like, the sweeper department in a format with, you know, green-black, which kind of scares me, right? You know, one of the things that I talked to Michael about this weekend was he was talking about how, or not Michael, Danny. Danny, I think Danny thinks the control decks are just bad because he's never had a good control deck as long as he's played Magic.
Yeah, that's something that you'll see with people who really haven't been playing Constructed for very long.
Yeah, he's just like, yeah, control decks just like are bad against mid-range decks. I'm like, well, so they have been.
Yeah, not necessarily historically, but recently, definitely true.
Yeah, and I think Blue-Black would suffer from that, whereas I don't think Jeskai does. I think Jeskai is actively good against Green-Black, whereas I think Blue-Black is probably bad against it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Blue-Black, what you're really looking to play against is probably combo, like, you know, Saheeli combo or Jeskai control, right? You're just a little bit more tuned for that type of matchup. Your removal is a little bit better than theirs for the matchup. You don't have as many dead cards because you're relying more on one for ones, less on sweepers that don't do anything in the control mirror, things like that.
Speaking of green black, it does come in again in the top two decks with 27 points. Green black aggro is it's coming up, man. What do you think? Is stick for real? Is it gonna stick around?
I'm not sure. I think it's really powerful, and you get to play a lot of individually great cards, and you even get to play some synergy strategies. I think that almost every list I've seen of the deck looks a little bit off to me. So I have a hard time kind of envisioning it. If you just
replace those Gifted Aetherborns with Servant of the Conduits, it might have a real deck.
Yeah, everything just feels like not quite there, right? Like, everybody has an idea as to where they're going, but there's just a lack of cohesion in a lot of the lists.
Yeah.
And a lack of real vision. And it's early, right? Right. So
one thing that I will say, and is I think that it, I know that some people talked about this and they said, oh, the Nissa is not good in the deck, you shouldn't play it. And I actually don't see a way for you to beat control decks without playing some number of Nissas and some number of Lilianas.
Yeah, and I think Nissa seems really, really good in the mirror too.
Yeah, I think that Nissa is kind of perfect for the deck. I mean, it's perfect for a lot of reasons. When you think about it, you can, like, even her ultimate will just win you so many games. I think people forgot that that's how the Green Light Tokens deck often won games, was ultimating Nissa.
Yeah, because it was just the end of the game every time, and she gums up the board so well in her own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that it's the perfect fit for the deck. I'm a big fan of this deck overall. If I was going to play mid-range deck, this would be one that I would highly consider.
Yeah, it's a sweet deck. It's, you know, slightly aggressively bent as far as mid-range decks go, but it definitely has staying power. It's not just, you know, all in, and if I get wrathed, I lose, or anything like that. But I do think that control strategies are pretty good against this deck, but it's just so powerful in its own, executing its own game plan, that it really puts you on notice really quickly.
Coming in first place, we do have the Saheeli combo decks. The deck specifically in first place is very different than the deck that was its predecessor from last week. If you look at Dylan Donegan's list, he's playing Jeskai Control with three Felidar Guardians and Saheeli's. Just a completely different deck.
Yeah.
This is kind of closer to what I thought the deck would look like.
Yeah, this is about, five cards off from what I've been playing? Six cards off? And it's kind of, we're operating in the same space as far as what you're looking to get out of the deck, the way you want it to play. You're not all in on the combo, but you want to be able to find it. So you're playing some amount of dig spells, which is what you want to be playing in your control decks anyway. And, you know, you've got kind of two distinct but powerful game plans in the combo and Torrential Gear Hulk, which, you know, can just do the same Gear Hulk things it always does.
This, I'm okay with this deck existing. The thing that I worry about, if I do worry, is that somebody finds like a 4 or 5 color broken version of the deck that like just always combos on turn 4 with like, or like on turn 5 with like a Blossoming Defense or something, right? Like it's like a green version of the deck that like Blossoming Defense to protect itself, right? Where it's just like, oh, well, that's just not fun.
Yeah, I mean, that is, it's possible, but I mean, Dispel is like just better than Blossoming Defense. You're protecting your combo, right? So like, if that were the case, I think it's probably like,
if an all-in broken version of the combo deck, that's a great point. You know, maybe just an all-in version of the combo deck, right? Just doesn't matter what it is. I do worry that that will exist, but I don't think it will exist. I think that Saheeli having to go to one is just too much for this deck to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, I think that
there was some sweet sideboard tech out of the Metalwork Colossus deck this weekend, which was 4 of the red implement, which deals 1 damage to a player.
Sure, sure.
And it was like, oh, this is perfect.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you do have to expose your Saheeli to Walking Ballista or Shock or any number of things in order to combo is an inherent weakness. The things that are like onboard tricks, like the implement and like Walking Ballista, aren't quite as powerful because they are easy enough to play around, and you know, it is still a planeswalker with real abilities and things like that. So I'm not as afraid of that as you might think when playing Saheeli, but I think that this deck does have enough inherent weaknesses that it will never be oppressive, but will always be powerful.
Yeah. With that said, what would you play and why?
I mean, I kind of talked about it already, but I would just keep playing this Jeskai Saheeli deck. I think it's great. It's everything I've ever wanted.
Yeah. I could see myself playing the Saheeli version right now. I'm just on the straight control version of Jeskai, but I haven't, in all of the playtesting I've done and all of the games that I've watched, I don't see it from anything else. I see Torrential Gear Hulk acting like a Sphinx's Revelation, and I want to do that.
Yeah, it's when you are using your Torrential Gear Hulks to flashback Glimmer of Genius, that's usually like a pretty good herald for the end of the game, right? Yeah. Where like if
you said they're finding Glimmer of Geniuses or Torrential Gear Hulks, like Sphinx's Revelations, finding Sphinx's Revelations.
Right. Because like usually like if you have to use your Torrential Gear Hulk like to flashback a counter spell or a removal spell, like it's still super powerful.
Right.
Right. But if you get to just cast it just for this is the part of the game we're in now and you get back a Glimmer, it's usually so indicative of the end of the game.
Yep. Yeah, so I think that we're pretty clear on what we're playing. I know that Danny and Michael really like Blue-Red Emerge right now, and Michael also really likes Mardu vehicles. So yeah.
And if you play against either of them in the Pro Tour, don't remember that.
Yeah, I don't know that they've literally decided anything that they're playing.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Let's move on to the training notes. Every week on the show, we want to talk about something that's going to help you get better at Magic. This week, we want to talk about building a mana base and how it affects your own tempo. This is a great topic and something that I think that a lot of people don't think about when building their mana bases. A long time ago on the podcast, we talked about, you know, playing like tap lands in something like green white
people
tokens,
yeah,
and how you probably shouldn't do that as much, you know, just because it's so important for you to, in a curve out deck, it's so important for you to curve out that those lands can really hurt you.
Right, yeah, like having, you know, one, like, for example, in that type of deck, if you're playing one Selesnya Guildgate type card where it always comes into play tapped, it's going to prevent you from curving out to 5, you know, something like 7% of the time or something like that.
Yeah.
Which doesn't sound high, but it's, in a deck that its primary strength is its curve out, you're basically just almost signing up to lose 7% more games.
Yeah, whereas when you think about a deck, and here's the thing, is this can be different in different types of decks that are still aggro decks, but not like that. Where if you think about a deck with like 14 one drops, that in multi, in two, with, between two colors, you might be okay with playing a tap land because either you can play two one drops on turn two or one drop, one drop. But in a deck like green white, where none of your cards are one drops, you might have to take an entire turn off just to play that tap land.
Yeah, or yeah, playing, you know, advocate is, it's fine, but it's not what you really have signed up for with the deck, right?
Right.
Where there are decks that can afford it, you know, in the control deck, playing, you know, your first three lands tapped, you know, kind of whatever, right? It's just, that's totally fine most of the time.
So when are tap lands worth it, and when are they not worth it?
So they're not worth it if you probably can't win a game without being able to spend all of your mana every turn in the early turns. So if, you know, playing a tapped land is a significant cost to your strategy, you know, your deck is designed to go 1, 2, 3, 4, then tapped lands are almost never going to be worth it. You're going to have to find some way to work around it, right? If you can't construct the deck without playing tapped lands, the deck probably just doesn't work. But if you're playing a deck that is playing lots of inexpensive spells, especially if they're reactive spells, you can wait until your opponent does something, and you still have stuff to do for 1 and 2 mana, then you have quite a bit of flexibility in how you build your mana base, and you can afford to play the better, greedier mana base where you have, you know, more total colored sources.
Yeah. And I think that it's important to think about a few things when I'm thinking about this. When I think about, like, blue-black control, right, back in the day, if I need to cast, you know, murder and or not murder, Hero's Downfall and Dissolve, I'm going to play some tap lands.
Yeah, that's the only way that you could realistically do that without playing 40 lands, right?
Right. Otherwise, I just am going to lose games to just not having the right colors of mana. And that's important, right? But the way that you do that is by having something else in what I like to call modular spots, right? We kind of talked about this a second ago with the aggro deck, right? The reason that some, like, there was a black-red aggro deck back in the day that played the red-black Guildgate. And the reason that it could do that is it played, like, 12 one-drops between two colors and then 4 drops, right? So its one-drops acted as its 2-drop slot so that you could play the lands, and then it played 4 drops so that you didn't care about the tap lands earlier.
Yeah, and that deck was kind of unique, especially because its mana requirements were greedy, right? You were playing, like, Giralf's Messenger and Thundermaw Hellkite. So you needed as many red-black duels as you can.
I think that deck played Giralf's Messenger.
It did early. It wasn't towards the end, but it was playing Boros Reckoner.
The one that won, like, multiple GPs in a row? I'm pretty sure it didn't play Giralf's Messenger.
No, I don't think it was by that point, but it was playing Boros Reckoner, right?
Possibly.
And
I think it was just Hellriders, Falkenwrath the Aristocrats, One Drops, and Thundermaw Hellkite. And burn spells. It was literally the entire deck. It was a Hellrider deck that wanted, like, as many one drops in play as possible.
So I remember that deck too, but I thought that was not the deck that won.
No, it won 3 GPs in a row.
Okay. Interesting. I'd have to pull up the deck list because I don't remember that deck in great detail, but it played 2 Rakdos Guildgates, right?
Some number of Rakdos Guildgates. Yeah. I'm not sure how many.
Yeah, I'm remembering now. But that deck did have still a fairly greedy mana base.
Yeah.
In terms of how much red and black you wanted.
The thing that it did really well is it wasn't trying to go 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop, or 1-drop, 1-drop, 1-drop. It was, I'm going to play dudes, I'm going to burn your guys, and then I'm going to drop Hellrider. And that's my deck.
Yeah. And it was sort of the replacement for red-black zombies when that deck started to fall out of favor. And it was just sort of the more people realized that Thundermaw Hellkite was just way more powerful than anything that deck did, right? And it was, those decks were both very powerful, but it was on the grounds of playing more individually powerful aggressive creatures rather than trying to get as many of them into play as quickly as possible or as much power into play as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and when you think about it, you know, being able to, the power of this was being able to play black things in your red deck, right? Because my black things cost so little black mana, they were able to just splash the black with tap lands and, you know, make their Falkenwrath Aristocrats great. And that's really important, right? Because they got to play mostly mono red with their one drops while getting to play a very powerful hard to deal with, hasty, huge threat.
Yeah, exactly.
And you see this in other decks too. When you think about decks like Emerge or from the old standard, that deck played a lot of tap lands in the form of like Evolving Wilds or even just man lands, different things. And the way that it did it is it played modular spells, right? It played Vessel so that you could Vessel on turn one, do it later when you didn't have mana. You know, lots of different ways to maximize the use of its mana without having to curve out. And that's a huge part of when you can play those kind of mana bases in maybe a deck that's not like blue-black control and needs to, you know, maximize its sources. The thing where this becomes a downside is like if I don't play a 2-drop on turn 2, I'm gonna lose.
Right. And there are plenty of decks that is a very real fact about them. Right. And that's sort of the obvious weakness that I see in a lot of players with, you know, this great new brew that they came up with as a newer player, where it's like, I'm going to play all these super powerful cards, I've got all these synergies, but the deck just can't function because of its mana base. And that's something that you do have to keep in mind. You know, the power level of standard mana bases kind of ebbs and flows. When it's shock lands and check lands, you can play basically whatever you want. When it's our current mana bases, you have to be much more restrictive and much more disciplined as to the mana bases that you play. And kind of trying to realize how to get the right number of each colored sources into your deck while also being able to cast spells because your lands are coming into play untapped. It's sort of like a walking on a wire, right?
Right.
So what are... And then the other side of that is kind of tap lands that you want to play just because they're actually great, like Wandering Fumarole, like Hissing Quagmire. Tap lands that, or, you know, Scry lands back when those were in standard, those were just good. Mm-hmm. Those are cards that are worth having a land come into play tapped for.
Right.
Other than just fixing your mana.
I'm surprised. I know that Scry lands slow down the format a lot because they're so powerful for standard, but they also just seem so perfect for standard because they created this balancing act where it's like, no, I'm going to punish the heck out of you for playing that Scryland by like being hyper aggressive. By there were 12 Scryland mana bases.
Yeah. And that format was interesting in terms of its mana base because, I mean, there were monocolored decks playing Scrylands just to play them, right? Yeah. And then there were decks that were like, oh, you came to the wrong neighborhood, Mr. Temple of Malady. And
right.
There was, yeah, it was, I think they're sweet. I'm sure that they'll come back because they're actually.
Yeah, there are really two, good. There are two perfect lands, in my opinion, for standard. The check lands and the scry lands. Those lands are just perfect.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, they kind of go in different types of formats, right? When you're training.
Yeah.
Because, like, a mana base of scry lands and check lands sounds like a nightmare. Sounds like you're playing right. A bunch of guild gates. But, like, check lands and shock lands was too good. So there's, like, they balance things out.
Check
right?
lands were perfect before shock lands existed.
No, that's true. That's true. The check lands and man fast lands.
And fetch lands.
Yeah. Those yeah. were, yeah, that was totally
great formats.
Fine. Yeah.
And I think that it's important to talk about something like, maybe, like fast lands, which is something we have now. You know, back in the day, and people just refuse to do this now because there's so many new Magic players, but blue-white control just played 4 fast lands. That was just a thing that it did. Because why not? It's going to come into play turns 1-3, some of the most important turns of the game, when I need to counter your stuff that could be really important and put me far behind in the early game. And, you know, I need to cast this mana leak. I need to cast this I don't remember what the blue-blue one was. Anyway, it didn't matter because it had mana leak, so they didn't play that many of them.
Yeah, and just... They're powerful, right? They come into play untapped on the most critical turns, and mm-hmm. in the later turns when you can afford to play a tapped land more often.
Yep.
You know, they're a tapped land, and that's fine. And then you also play lands that, you know, come into play untapped late, such as Prairie Stream,
yeah.
things like that, where, you know, so being able to strike a balance between your lands, right? The ones that are going to come into play untapped early and ones that are going to come into play untapped late, and have an idea that you're going to sequence them in such a way and kind of build them with that in mind, that you want more of the ones that come into play untapped early.
So how do you keep your sources high enough without compromising functionality. When you think of a deck like Merfolk in Legacy that plays Wasteland, Mutavault, and Cavern of Souls, and Islands to cast its double blue spells that it has to cast, what do you think of?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a running joke, right? Where every mono blue deck in history has terrible mana because you feel like you can play so many colorless lands. And in a sense, you can. But casting Lord of Atlantis off of a deck that only has 14 blue sources is actually like psychosis. It's just wrong. But because you are trying to play a deck with a super high level of synergy, you have to make sacrifices. And Aether Vial helps a lot with that. Cavern of Souls helps a lot with that. And, you know, just good decision-making helps a lot with that. But you do have to realize that, you know, the deck is just bad without Mutavault or Wasteland or Lord of Atlantis. So you're going to play all of them, and you are just going to have to eat crow sometimes, right?
Right.
And so knowing when you can afford to do that, when is your deck have a high enough power level that it can really afford to play that kind of nonsensical mana base?
Yeah, I think that it's something that you have to do, basically just do the math on. You know, a lot of people just aren't willing to sit down and do the math. You know, when I build mana bases, I feel like I get really close really quick. And, you know, there is tuning that happens later, right? You can build your initial mana base, make sure you have the right number of sources, play the deck a couple of times, and then go, okay, what happened in my games? And, you know, then go and look at, like, all right, these were critical turns. What does my mana need to look like for me to have the right mana on these turns? Do I need to change the composition of my lands? Or do I need to change the composition of my spells? Because I can't reasonably change the composition of my lands to cast this, this, or this.
Right. Is the deck that wants to go, you know, Expedition Envoy, Grasp of Darkness into, you know, Rogue Refiner, is that a real strategy?
Yeah, and I think that we make that joke a lot on the podcast, and people don't understand where we're coming from, where it's the classic Soldier of the Pantheon into Precinct Captain into Lev Sky Knight into Obzedat.
Yeah.
It's like, what just happened?
Yeah, it's so powerful, right? And that deck...
Or no, it was like... And they had, like, Life Banes on me. That deck was crazy.
Yeah, that deck's mana base was nuts.
It's like a joke, right? It's like... And they also played Supreme Verdict, which was double blue. Like, it just...
It's only one blue.
Oh, boom.
But, yeah, that deck's mana base... But it was also a curve-out deck, right? You wanted to go Soldier, Captain, Sky Knight, Verdict, Obzedat in every game. And that's a really hard mana curve to pull off.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of decks that do function like that. Almost every white-black deck in history has terrible mana because all of your good white creatures cost double white, and you want to be able to play your black spells early, right? You want to be able to go
double black.
Right, some of them.
And, I mean, this is actually one of the reasons that I hate white-black. A lot of people are like, oh, especially just hate white. And it's like, yeah, I think that it's like, the most mana-intensive decks are all white decks.
Yeah, because it's a fact, and they're designed that way, right? Because
they get something for their cost.
Right. The creatures tend to be under-costed for how powerful they are, and they make you pay for that by costing white, white, white.
That's never happened. But I get what you're saying. But, like, it's interesting, right? Because... you know, there have been times in history, for example, where, like, there were Llanowar Elf Mirran Crusader decks. And, like, that's asking a lot of your mana base.
Right, you basically have to start with Razor Verge Thicket, right? Or it just doesn't work.
Yeah. We played a deck that was trying to go Llanowar Elf into Savage Knuckleblade.
Yeah, and that deck, basically, yeah, it needed to be Yavimaya Coast or just...
Or, yeah, or Mana Confluence. Like, there was...
Right, yeah.
There were options that you had, and you have to know, right? If you're like, you know what, I'd love to go one drop into Savage Knuckleblade. How can I make that happen?
And the answer was, start every game at 14 life.
Yeah.
And that was a powerful enough strategy, right? Because the payoff was very high. But... You know, if you were going through all that trouble and you were getting, Wistful Selkie out of it, it's probably not quite worth it, right?
Sure.
It's a fine card, but like you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself for a relatively low payoff.
And this is talking about building your mana gate bases with sequencing in mind, right? You have to know where in the curve you want to cast certain spells and what you want your deck to look like through a game of Magic. In Limited, it's a little bit harder to decide how every game of Magic is going to go for you, but that's kind of the beauty of deck building and Constructed, is you get to decide where to put those points and where you want the game where you want to navigate the game through, and you do that through your deck building and through your mana base.
Right. When you're building your mana base, you need to have an idea that, you know, I'm going to play the Spire Bluff Canals early, so I'm going to play four of them because I want them in my opener. And then I'm going to play Basics through the mid game, and then play Prairie Stream late as my, you know, final lands, because they're going to be able to come into play untapped at that point. So I'm going to play a lot of fast lands, a lot of basics, and just a few of these battle lands because I don't want them early.
And then there are times where you identify, well, if I'm playing this many basic lands, it might be better to play a fast land Shadowland mana base, right? A lot of times pros have identified, oh no, this is just better because I want just all my lands to come into play untapped.
Right. And it just depends on the number of basics at that point, right? And you have to ask yourself real questions like, am I playing
an all plains deck and I can get the blue white land to come into play untapped and the, and what is the other one that checks for planes?
The green white.
There you go.
Right. And, you know, in Banned Company, they wouldn't. Channel Fireball sort of innovated, they like to say, Fortified Village, when almost everybody before that was playing Canopy Vista. But they're like, we can actually play so many basics in this deck that they are way closer to Savannahs than they are to Selesnya Guildgates. And that's super powerful. And that mana base worked surprisingly well.
Yeah.
And, but if you're not playing that many basics because you need to keep your colored sources much higher, like if you're playing just a much greedier deck,
yeah,
then you need to look at battle lands.
Yeah, one thing that I like to think about is, you know, you'll find that control decks have a range in which their lands can come in. 25 to 28, I think we talked about this once on the podcast, where like that's where you'll see control decks is in the 25 to 28 range. Typically 26 to 27 are the real norms, but they can land on the other two sides of the spectrum. And it's, how does that happen? And I think it's, all right, these are the spells I'm casting. I need specifically this number of sources.
Right, exactly. I need to be able to play my third and fourth lands into play untapped almost every game so that I can, you know, cast Dissolve into Wrath of God or, you know, whatever they are. And you need to be able to have that functionality built into your deck. And the only way that you can secure your number of land drops is to play more lands. So you go up a little bit higher on that, and then that gives you the payoff of being able to play, you know, seven drops, right? The Haymakers, the Control Finishers, your Torrential Gearhulks, your Elspeth Sun's Champion, your Sphinx of the Final Words.
Yep.
You know, whatever it is that you're choosing to end the game with, you get that payoff by playing enough lands to make sure that you always have enough lands in the early game.
Yeah, and I think that one of the important things to learn here, and what some of you put down here, is don't fight what your deck wants. If your deck needs you to be able to cast a 5-drop on turn 5, yeah, you probably need 26, 27 lands, dude.
Right. Yeah, people who play Archangel Avacyn in their 22, 23 land decks, you're psychopaths. It's just a fact. It's tough. You're going to not be able to cast it on turn 5 so often that it's almost, you know, not worth the card in your deck, right?
Yeah, and it's important to note that, like, how often will these cards that you're putting in your deck be dead because of the choices that you made before the tournament started?
Right, and then on the flip side, if you're saying, okay, I really want to play Archangel Avacyn, so I have to play 26 lands in my deck that's mostly, you know, 1 and 2 mana humans, is the fact that Archangel Avacyn really takes up about 7 or 8 cards in your deck actually worth it? You know, these are the things you have to be thinking about.
Cognizant.
Is it, right, is it going to, am I fighting what my deck's identity is by playing these spells and thus for the lands that require them? Is playing, you know, a 3-color mono 1-drops aggro deck really viable with how shaky the mana base will be?
Is playing 1-drop, 2-drop, Sleth Sky Knight, Supreme Verdict, 5-drop a reasonable thing to be doing?
Right. Is that a strategy? Is that a deck? Did Yuya invent that on a dare? Nobody will ever know the answers to some of these questions.
I he being like as good at magic as Yu Yu Watanabe is, there has to be some percentage of, I'm going to do this, people are going to try this, and I just get a laugh out of it. Like, they thought that I was serious.
They thought that was a deck. Yeah, no, and there's, we do like to make fun of that deck a lot and in decks like it, because that deck was kind of the peak it of...
literally never did anything ever again, by the way.
Right, because it was also the peak of, what even is this deck? What even, is this an aggro or a control deck, or what actually is the identity of this deck?
Yeah.
And that deck, it was, as far as I know, unidentifiable. I still to this day have no idea how you would identify that deck.
You still have no idea how you would win a game with the deck.
Right. I've never seen either. Certainly saw people win games with the deck, but just not a lot of, you know, matches or tournaments.
Yeah, other than Yu Yu Watanabe, I don't right. know that it ever happened.
Exactly. It was just a peculiar deck because the cards were so at odds with each other, right?
You know, I think this is true of a few things. Like, I also want to say that I would say question people's mana bases. So often you see people port mana bases and change spells.
Yeah, and that's a fine starting point, right? Because you know that the mana base at least functions. But if you are going from a deck that plays mostly double green spells to a deck that plays mostly double black spells, and you keep the same mana base, it's going to punish you.
Yeah. Oftentimes, these are players that I often hear, oh, I got so color screwed. And I'm like, oh, well, what, like, what?
You're playing nine black sources in your Liliana deck.
Yeah. And it's important that you don't make easy mistakes like that, right? It's like, I need a Jeskai mana base. I'm just going to go look for one. Oh, here's a deck that somebody built. Then this deck was built to play like double blue spells on turn three, and you're not playing cancels.
Right. So you have just kind of hamstrung yourself with this deck that's all predicated around being able to play Disallow, and you're not even playing them. So you're going to really get punished for trying to cast your Fumigates and your, you know, whatever else, your Shocks.
Your exquisite Firecrafts. They're not in the form, but like that's kind of...
Yeah, that type of effect, right?
Yeah, your Goblin Dark Dwellers, you know, whatever it is you're trying to do. So, yeah, that kind of is it for this week's episode. Don't forget to check out the Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg. You can be a patron of the show. We appreciate everything we get. It really does mean the world to us. Our next goal is to do Card of the Week every single week. You can become eligible for Card of the Week by donating $3 or more on patreon.com/ccmtg, and you can win Card of the Week. You know, we've given out a lot of pretty sweet stuff, and we're going to continue to do that. So go to patreon.com/ccmtg to become a patron of the show. You can also, don't forget to check out our sponsor at Oasis Games. You can go to OasisGamesLC.com. You get 15% off your first order by using code CCMTG at checkout. You get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood. You can join the conversation by going to Twitter by tweeting hashtag WouldBeGood. You can join the Facebook group at Constructive Criticism Family. And yeah, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook at Casey Tuna Bloodworth or on Twitter at CC Bloodthirst.
You can email the podcast directly at ccmtg.info@gmail.com. You can find me at Spencer13H or at Spencer Stephen Howland. I encourage you to join the Facebook group where you can easily have access to, you know, speaking with us. We love joining conversations in there. You can also join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13Dev or Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTYRPE. And yeah, it's a we have a lot of people that want us to do stuff with the clan. It's something that we definitely think about all the time. There's not currently a lot of functionality in that, but if you want to be a part of a group that has similar minds to you and maybe try and get some playtesting with people who are logged on at the same time as you, go to, you know, shoot us a message and we'll try and get you added. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. We just mentioned a little bit earlier. If you tweet it, we will read it. Hashtag would that be good is something we do every week on the podcast where we read the tweets that you guys send in. We definitely read Mason's, so we definitely read Matt's.
Okay.
What if every time Richard Spencer got in front of a camera, someone
cold cocked him?
I don't know what that is. That when you punch somebody out?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
So, not gonna go political on the show, but don't punch people. Like,
just don't hit people.
Like, just be a better person than the person that you want to hit.
I find it funny that this tweet was sent out from multiple accounts. I think that person has multiple accounts.
I don't think they're a podcast listener. I think that it was, I mean, maybe, but I think it was mostly I think I don't know. Maybe.
No, I think Nick Nod owns Win a Galaxy 7 S7 now.
Maybe. Or maybe neither of them are real. Maybe Nick Nod's not a real person.
Boom.
And he works for, he's a front, Samsung front.
Nerd Rage Championship trailed this Saturday. Would that be good? I don't know what the Nerd Rage Championship is, but I hope you won it.
Yeah, get after it, Josh. Let me know if you are the Nerd Rage Champion.
At Spencer13H, man, you interrupt Magic Mike a lot on CCMTG. Hashtag would be good. It would be better if you didn't. I didn't interrupt him once this week.
That's true. So good job on that. Always improving.
I am always improving. No, we actually really appreciate feedback like this. It's really funny. We actually got feedback that Michael interrupted Casey way too much like a few weeks ago. So I don't know. It's hard when you're doing a podcast like at a table with somebody and like having a free flowing conversation.
It is, because you know, when you cut somebody off just in a conversation, it's not intentional, but nobody takes offense to it, right? But if you're listening to a podcast,
it can
and
be
you're
annoying.
Listening to somebody talk,
like just now,
right?
It was twice. This is all on purpose. I'm being rude.
I'm exactly, sorry. But it's not. Yeah, it just doesn't come across that way to us as much. We do try to be conscious of it. We used to be really bad at it. Now we're only kind of bad at it.
Yeah. So Ray, I do plan on improving at it. Obviously, I did amazing this week, and I will do better. I'll try and do equally good next time. How do you feel about this, Mike? So rude. He's not even talking.
I know. He's such a diva.
Yeah. Just complete diva. Free Gem Regent, Herald of Anguish, 1, 2, 3 cost artifacts, Tez's Touch, and Grixis. Hashtag would be good. This is from at CKLABen. Yeah, I think that there's a lot to Herald of Anguish. Like, a lot to it.
That's the 7-mana demon?
Yeah.
Yeah, that card is really powerful. I don't know if it's, like, standard superstar powerful or if it's commander make everybody slam the table powerful.
Yeah. I think that there could be something there. We could see something, like, with that card at the PT. So, yeah, keep an eye on that. Okay, so this has to be tied with Alex qualifying for 3 Pro Tours as the best thing that happened last week.
Oh, yeah. When Austin Geltz...
Austin Geltz is a member of the Team Constructor Criticism Group in Utah, where our testing team that helps us test for Pro Tours, that goes to PBTQs, travels to GPs and stuff. And his name is spelled G-O-E-L-T-Z. And we had team shirts made for everybody. And they had to buy them. And Austin bought his shirt. He paid for it after I sent him the link where he can look at it, check it, make sure it's correct. That says G-O-E-T-L-Z instead. So it's just completely wrong.
What's great about this is that he's worn this shirt a bunch of times.
So many times! He's worn this shirt for months.
And like nobody ever noticed it except for Michael just recently.
Oh my gosh. And like... I was dying laughing at work because, like, I called Michael. I was like, why did he buy it? Why would you buy the shirt?
Right. Why would you buy a shirt that has a misspelling of your name on it? This isn't like Shanghai.
I'm not making him a new one.
No, that'd be
ridiculous. Just his shirt now.
Right. Good old Godels. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, my gosh. Ugh. All right. New deck tech for Team Emerges Up on YouTube. Hashtag, would that be good? Yeah, it was good. I like that deck a lot. It's really fun. You should check it out on our YouTube channel, which you can watch every week on YouTube. On the website. I posted there, too. On the plane, let's go to GP San Jose. Hashtag MTG. Hashtag, would that be good? So San Jose was great. I had a garbage bag of shrimp.
That's too much.
It was so much shrimp. I did not finish it. Michael and I shared it, and we gave some to Alex. And Michael Callahan and Alex went ham at that restaurant. They each had a bowl, like a huge bowl of gumbo, and their own bag of like shrimp and crawfish, and like others, like clam chowder. It was crazy. They ate themselves into a stupor.
Well, they do what they have to do to get by.
After 3 win-it-ins, I clutched my first day 2 at the GP, going 6-2-1. Feels good. Hashtag GPSJ. Hashtag would be good. Lander, I'm so sad I didn't see you there. I would have loved to meet you. And congratulations on your first day 2.
Yeah, that's sweet, man.
That's at @serial_coma. That is a great Twitter handle.
It's no, I thought it was serial comma. That is great.
That is a fantastic Twitter handle.
Yeah, A+. I think that's his only tweet too, man.
Oh, that's so great.
All right. At Scotty Porosky says Frontier Abzan Delirium /Megamorph #. Would that be
sold?
I basically don't really know much about Frontier. I'm sure that it's fine.
Wait, you're telling me I had to play Raptors? Wait, hold on. Is Seder Wayfinder legal? I never know the answer to this question.
Yes.
So I'm playing a Seder Wayfinder, Raptor, Delirium, Siege Rhino. This deck sounds great. What are we doing with our lives? We should be playing Frontier.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like one of the better decks that you could lose to Rally with, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really play Frontier. I've seen people play it. I've never once seen a deck that looked like it could beat Rally, and I don't know that I will until they ban something out of it. But I don't know. I just don't follow the format, so I don't know. But I think that Abzan Delirium was one of the sweeter decks that I've played in my life, and Den Protector is just good times.
MTG Lord of Leaves, that's Brian Dawes, says, at CCMTG 1, my first SCG Tour IQ with Green Black Elves Modern. I think Elves deserves a shout out. #. Would that be good? And that's got a gif of some elves walking past. Is that Lord? Which Lord is that?
It's the one from The Hobbit. What is his name? It's Legolas's dad.
Yeah, I don't know his name.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not.
But shout out to elves.
Get
and shout out to Brian for winning his first IQ. Congratulations, man. That is it for this week. You can always tweet at us with #. Be good. Don't forget, you can email us at ccmtg.info@gmail.com. You can be a patron of the show by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Check out the YouTube channel. I do a deck tech and a video, a little video blog every week on there. And we will see you guys all next week.
Peace.
Oh, my gosh. Next week, Casey, will either be... It'll be Monday, so I'll either be super happy or super pissed off. In fact, if the Patriots lose the Super Bowl, we're not doing a podcast next week.
Oh, I am. It'll
it'll just be about the Patriots losing in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You'll be fine. You're a big kid.
I just don't know. It's already happened twice, man. It'd be like two of the worst days of my life. Is there something worse than losing in the Super Bowl? If you could get hit in the groin or have your team lose in a Super Bowl, which would you choose?
I would probably choose getting hit in the groin just because, like, it's temporary, right? It fades.
Yeah, losing in the Super Bowl lasts forever.
Right.
I have to hear about Eli Manning for the rest of my life.
I mean, I have to hear about Trent Dilfer for the rest of my life, so.
That's pretty bad, too.
Yeah. And Kerry Collins, which is like even worse than that. So,
well, thank you everybody for listening. Enjoy the Super Bowl, enjoy the Pro Tour, and we'll see you guys all next week.
Magic, magic, magic.